In our lives, we have many reminders that are out there. Many reminders that happen all around us. Reminders so that we don't do something that we're not supposed to. So we don't hurt ourselves. So that we are informed of our surroundings and things that happened. So that we are aware. All of these things for why we have these reminders. We have reminders all around us when we drive, when we cook, when we shop, when we pump gas, etc. Many, many things. Reminders are everywhere. We have them here. We have them out in society everywhere. These reminders most often come in the form of signs. Signs. As we are driving, we have signs that tell us what the speed limit is. Very, very valuable what the speed limit is. That a U-turn is not allowed in a certain area. That a specific area is designated for bike riders. We have those. That you are approaching road construction, and so on. Many different signs. We have signs posted on certain tools, appliances, machines, or even packaging for our protection. Very valuable. So valuable. Such as, and I'm not making these up, do not iron clothes while on the body. It's a valuable sign. That's something that we need to know. I want to know the person who did that, actually. Or on a hairdryer, I love this one. I've only done this twice. It says, do not use while sleeping. So do not use while sleeping. I've noticed in signs on certain foods, these are ones that I found. I love weird things. And this is some that I found on it. This was on milk. So this was a half gallon of milk, a gallon of milk, I don't know, is a while ago. And it says, warning, may contain milk. So just in case the people didn't know and there's an allergy problem. Or in a box of Planter nuts, says, warning, may contain nuts. So very valuable stuff. Here's some other ones that I found. I love this. On odor eaters, it says, please do not eat. That is valuable. Here's another one. It was on a blender. It said, on no account, improvise as a fish aquarium. You can see the problem with that. You have to wonder, what was the story that led up to these? Here's another one. This is probably my favorite. We have more to go over, but this is probably my favorite because my imagination runs wild with it. On stockings, not to be used in the commission of a felony. Now tell me what bank robber would go into a store and they said, we can't use those because it's breaking the law. I can just see somebody looking at them and saying, oh, I can't use those ones. So on a fridge, I could keep going, but it'd take up too much time. On a fridge, refrigerate after opening. Okay. On alphabet blocks. Now, these are the little wooden blocks with letters and has shapes on them. They're just little wooden blocks. It says, not for children. Letters may be used to construct words, phrases, and sentences that may be deemed offensive. Okay, that's good to know. I didn't know you can't do that outside of that, but with these little wooden blocks, you can. On a cardboard windshield sunshade, warning, do not drive with sunshield in place. I found a few of these. These are where kind of things get lost in translation. Very valuable signs. On a Taiwanese shampoo says, use repeatedly for severe damage. Okay. On a Korean kitchen knife says, warning. Okay, there's some words missing. So that's the problem here. Warning, keep out of children. On a frozen chow mein from China, serving suggestion, defrost. Okay, on a New Zealand insect spray, said the product not tested on animals. That's a problem. We have no idea if these work. And the last one I have is on the bottom of a Tesco's tiramisu dessert, says do not turn upside down. So it's already too late if you're reading that. So there are so many signs out there that we would consider unnecessary, but they have to be put in place. They have to be there. We live in a place that, or a time, that you can be sued for pretty much anything that happens. Anything that happens out there. And companies have to protect themselves. And some of those signs come in forms like that. And you say, why? What was the story behind that one? How did that possibly happen? Those companies put those signs or labels on products, again, for a reason. But there are important signs out there as well. such as stop signs, street names, so you know where you're going, where you've been, caution signs, slippery when wet. Those are very valuable. These are useful. These are signs that help us. They're also signs that represent something. They represent signs that represent something else. They can have powerful meanings behind them. I looked up one of these on the dictionary, and it said, flowers are a sign of affection. Okay, that's, we know that. We've understood that. We've been around long enough for sure. A flower out in the wild isn't necessarily a sign of affection, but when you hand it to someone, giving it is a sign of affection of what, it can be a friendship, it can be romantic, all of those. Even the color red is a sign of romance. The thumbs up, which isn't something that we use as much as in other times and culture, but a thumbs up sign is a gesture of approval of something good. Also, as the Bible talks about the sign of the end of the age, the sign of the end of the age, talking about what conditions will be present in the end time before the return of Jesus Christ. As where Jesus was telling the disciples what will occur. This is the sign. These are the things that you pay attention to. These are the things that you watch for. They're a sign of when you start approaching those moments. So that is a sign showing us where we are, again, as the end approaches. And some say the sign of the times. We've heard that a lot. That's church speak. The sign of the times. The meaning of a sign. Here's the actual meaning of a sign. It says an object, quality, or event whose presence, so just the presence of it or occurrence, indicates the probable presence or occurrence of something else. An object, quality, or event whose presence or occurrence indicates the probable presence or occurrence of something else. All signs are to bring to mind something that happened. A reminder, if you will, it presents or represents something. There are many mentions of signs in the Bible. I would consider all of them significant. Anytime the Bible talks about a sign, it's significant. Now, there are three that stand out as continual, and one of those three we will be talking about in length today. But I would like to look at the first two quickly to get a feel of the significance of just being a sign, the significance of it, which much of the world dismisses, doesn't look at anymore. For the first sign, let's go back to Genesis 9. Genesis 9, this is the story of Noah after the flood. Genesis 9, read through the story again last night, all of it, and it's interesting how much you can just pull out of this story. We won't go too deep. Genesis 9, verse 8. Genesis 9, starting in verse 8, says, then God spoke to Noah and his sons with him, saying, and as for me, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you. And it goes further than just the human element. With every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, the every beast of the earth with you, of all that go out of the ark, every beast of the earth. The covenant is with all the earth. It's a powerful covenant. This covenant wasn't with man only, but with all the creatures of earth as well, every creature. This was a covenant from God to man and included all creatures. Verse 11, thus I established my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. That never again is powerful. Never again, again, shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. Flood waters will never again destroy the earth. That's not saying never again, I mean for a long time, floodwaters. No, it's never again will floodwaters destroy the earth. Verse 12. And God said, this is a sign of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. Perpetual meaning continuing forever. Perpetual generations. I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. This was a perpetual covenant, meaning this covenant is everlasting. It doesn't end. There is no end to it. When God set this in motion, there is nothing that will reverse it, nothing. It's something that we can look at every time we see a rainbow and be reminded, and I hope we do. I don't all the time. I look at the beauty and I say, oh, that's beautiful, but it doesn't come to mind all the time. But it's there as a reminder, as a sign that is connected to something else. Then there was a sign of this covenant, and it's a reminder to those perpetual generations down to us today. It never ended. This was the definition of the word sign. It really starts making a whole lot of sense. Now, we're going to go back to it. An object, quality, or event whose presence or occurrence indicates the probable presence or occurrence of something else. It was a symbol of something very important that we are to remember today. It takes us back to God every single time. A sign is powerful. The rainbow is the sign of that covenant. But although there is a historical feature to the sign, the floodwaters, a long time ago, the floodwaters already happened. There's a historical feature. There's evidence of that, obviously. The rainbow is actually a reminder of something which is in the present. It's always in the present. It was in the present yesterday, today, tomorrow. It's in the present. It's something that's supposed to remind us. It is a reminder of the covenant which is occurring now, that God is faithful to his word. He doesn't walk away from it. He didn't say, oh, that's right, I forgot about that. I had a rainbow, I had everything set up. Nope, he doesn't forget. It's an everlasting reminder that God is faithful. Let's go ahead and finish out this section. I don't like just leaving it there. It says, it shall be when I bring a cloud over the earth that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow shall be in the cloud, and I will look on it to remember. God doesn't forget. That's saying it will always be there, the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant. I love that. It's a sign of that covenant, of God's perfection, of what he's truthful, he's faithful, which I have established between me and all the flesh that is on the earth. And when we think about being able to say a sign that God implemented, God put in there, also shows this personal touch that God is there. We're not alone. We're not on this by ourselves. It can feel like it at sometimes, but we're not. Every time we see it, it's the presence of God, of what he did. Again, this sign was an important symbol of an everlasting covenant. For the second one, let's go over to Genesis 17. Genesis 17. Genesis 17, starting in verse 1. We're not going to dissect this very much. We're going to look at the sign. Genesis 17, verse 1, said, when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, I am Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless. And I will make my covenant between me and you. Okay, there's another covenant. There's something else there. There's something of great richness. And multiply you exceedingly. Then Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations, a multitude of nations. That's a very rich word when you're looking at it. It's not just, hey, there's several. No, it's a multitude of nations that come out of that. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham. For I have made you a father of a multitude. It's really a multitude or a many nations. I will make you exceedingly fruitful. God will bless it. And I will make nations of you, and kings shall come from you. And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you in their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and your descendants after you. So we have here another everlasting covenant. It's not ending, meaning this covenant doesn't end either. It is perpetual, and it's set in motion. Again, that start button hit. However, this one was with certain people, not all people and not all creatures. It wasn't with the animal kingdom at all. Verse 8. And I give to you and your descendants after you the land in which you are a stranger, all the land of Canaan, as an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. An everlasting possession, but also the most important piece of this whole section is the last few words where he says, I will be their God. Because it's not an everlasting possession if you push that out of the way. God. That has a whole lot of greatness attached to it. There are two gods, one we don't want any part of, the God of this world, and the other we want to be part of his family. We desire that. We want that so very much. The statement, I will be their God, would open up all the blessings that came from that. You live by God's way of life. You walk by his commands, his statutes. You do those things. Incredible blessings come. The statement means comfort, strength, protection. It means guidance. It means love. It means peace. It means help. It means his hand is guiding that nation, and on and on and on. But unlike the other covenant, this one requires man's part. Man's part as well. The other covenant, he said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to destroy the earth with the flood. That was it. That was done. This one requires man's part as well. Verse 9, and God said to Abraham, as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you. You keep it throughout their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised. Verse 11, and you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskins, and it shall be a sign of the covenant. It's a physical sign of a covenant between me and you. The great sign for this covenant was circumcision. No less significant than the rainbow. The covenant is also to this day relevant. Circumcision is still required. I always like to give this little dramatic pause because everybody's a little bit uncomfortable. What do you mean? It's a perpetual sign. It's something that still has to be there. All right, let's go over to Romans 2. Romans 2. Romans 2, verse 25. Again, circumcision is still required. Romans 2, verse 25 says, for circumcision is indeed profitable if you keep the law, but if you are a breaker of the law, your circumcision has become uncircumcision, meaning it was only a physical thing which didn't necessarily change a man. Didn't change him. A circumcised man could still break the law, and an uncircumcised man could be righteous, could do the righteous requirements of the law. Verse 26, therefore, if uncircumcised man keeps the righteous requirements of the law, will not his uncircumcision be counted as circumcision? Verse 27, and will not the physically uncircumcised, if he fulfills the law, judge you, who even with your written code and circumcision are a transgressor of the law? For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision, that is which is outward in the flesh. There's been a changing from a physical to a spiritual. It still remained. It was still there, but it went physical to spiritual. Verse 29, but he is a Jew who is one outwardly, and circumcision of the is that of the heart in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men, but from God. This is true circumcision of the spirit, of the spiritual nation. This is a spiritual kingdom. Still continues. It never stops. Physically, circumcision is no longer required, but circumcision of the heart is required and part of that continual perpetual covenant of God's people. It has to be there. The significance of these two signs are huge. They're massive. They're perpetual. And therefore, the present time, they never ended. They never stopped. You can see by these, one, their importance. Two, they link back to God. They link back to God. And three, it's a reminder of his greatness and his love. It's very important. The signs are unbreakable by God, by one, which shows his faithfulness. Those signs, those covenants show his faithfulness to mankind. He's faithful. He's true to everything he says that he will do. We're the ones that mess up. He's the one that is faithful. And two, his dedication to man. We've recently talked about that again in the God is a loving father. He is dedicated to this. He's dedicated to his calling. He's dedicated to his plan, which again includes all people. He wants man to have salvation and to choose his way to live, that way which leads to life, that beautiful way. I'd like to now spend the rest of the sermon on the third sign. Looking at the first two signs shows the power behind them. We're not looking at something simple. We're not looking at something we can just put a sticker on and call it a sign. We're looking at things that are perpetual. They are huge. They are powerful. It shows the power behind them being made signs. The power and significance is also behind that third one. that we're going to be talking about. Thinking about the topic, I was wondering, how am I going to cover it? How am I going to cover this topic where we are today? What I mean by that was, in the recent era of the church was growing, when it was really growing and developing, and it was still new, but it was developing, everything was new to the bulk of the members, most members. It was new. The basic principles of everything was taught, then it was retaught, and then it was retaught, and then it was retaught, and those basic principles again and again and again. Now there's a different dynamic in the church. Something else has happened. We have more of a mature church. The majority of the members are long-time first generation. You know, you can go back 60 in longer years. You have second generation, third generation. Our children are fourth. Okay, I have to look to approval. Fourth generation. I think it was third or fourth. Fourth generation and so on. So we have this more mature church. The topic still needs to be taught. We still need to be reminded and revisited, and it still needs to be retaught, but almost from a different perspective, but never losing sight of the basic principles. What I'd like to try to do is concentrate on the mindset today. We're going to be looking at it, but we're talking about mindset, how we think of it, how we contemplate what we're doing on this day, and all of that. With that said, I'd like to go to Exodus 31. The mindset of this day. Exodus 31. Excuse me. Exodus 31. And verse 12, yours might have the title in it, the Sabbath Law. We're familiar with this one. Exodus 31, verse 12 says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying," again, that is Exodus 31, verse 12, now we're 13. "Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths," plural, "you shall keep. For it is a," that word "a" is important, "a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you," that you may know that I am the Lord. Where's the point? It goes back to God. The Sabbath is a sign. As we've covered, it is not the only sign. It is a sign, a powerful sign. It's an important sign. Signs are not chosen lightly or picked at random or an afterthought. It doesn't just something occurs and God says, "Hey guys, I was just thinking maybe we should make this a sign. What do you think?" No, it's not that. It's God behind it, and it's thoughtful, it's purposeful, and it has great meaning. Again, God says, "This is a sign throughout your generations," throughout your generations, meaning it is also perpetual. It isn't something that changes. As the other signs, it is everlasting, meaning it is a sign, again, for the present time. We can't take away from it. We can't change that. It is a sign for the present time. Verse 14, "You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you." I have that underlined in blue. It is holy to you. "Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people." This is still very much in place today, but is the spiritual aspect of it, which is way more powerful. If someone who profaning, to treat with no respect, so treating the Sabbath with no respect, they also would be cut off from among the brethren, from among the church. God is saying here to keep the Sabbath. This word means to keep, to guard, to observe, but it's to keep it, to guard it, protect it, that it's that valuable, to guard the Sabbath. The idea is that the Sabbath must be sacred to God's people, and we want to guard it. It is something of value. Remember, it is holy to you, not just another day. It goes on to say, it is holy to you. Now, something that has been brought out several times before is man cannot make anything holy. We don't have the ability to do that. So what are the three things again when you're looking at that for something to become holy? Well, one, it needs to be set apart from other things. Man can do that. July 4th, other holidays, those type of things. We can set something apart. Two, it needs to be set apart for a purpose. Okay, again, July 4th, we can do that. It's set apart for a purpose. But the third part is the most important. It is God who sets it apart is what makes it holy. Man cannot do that. July 4th is not holy. Important? Yes. Something to remember? Yes. But is it holy? No. Man cannot set something apart and make it holy. We can set it apart again to make it special, nice, a day of remembrance, but we can't make something holy. That is a right which has never been given to man. Man has never been able to do that. Any leader of any church throughout history has never been able to do that. God does it. So the Sabbath was set apart from other things. It was set apart for a great purpose, and it was God who set it apart. He was the one who made it holy. When we read, "For it is holy to you," the word "for" becomes very important when looking at that and breaking it down, meaning because. It is saying, because it is holy to you, you must guard the Sabbath. That is a personal responsibility. It says, because it's important to you, because it is holy to you, you guard it, you protect it. To guard is to not let time whittle away at the holiness of the Sabbath. I can say I have fallen into that. Just, you kind of get into the time, the rhythm, and it kind of whittles away at the Sabbath. And here it says, no, you're not to do that. You're not to do that at all. It is not to let man pollute what you know to be holy. It is to not allow forgetfulness to diminish what we are to remember. God says, no, keep that in your mind continually, always moving forward. To guard is to stay alert, aware. It's to stay watchful. The Sabbath is to be guarded. And here's the key in the fortress of our hearts. It's that important that we create a fortress and we put the Sabbath there. Here's the question. Are our hearts the fortress which will keep the Sabbath holy, or are we Saturday keepers? Because there's a difference. There's a big difference between that. Do we keep the Sabbath holy, or are we Saturday keepers? Verse 15. Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign, there it is, he repeats himself again, between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days, and he goes over the creation week, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. That one statement, there is a whole lot that we can get from that. He goes back to creation week. Let's take a look at that account. Let's go to Genesis 2. Basically, he's saying we can learn a lot about the Sabbath and what we are to do in watching how God was on the Sabbath, how he treated the Sabbath. Genesis 2, verse 1. Genesis 2, verse 1. Excuse me. Genesis 2, verse 1 says, "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished." Chapter 1, we know, is the six-day creation account from light to the pinnacle of creation, man. Light all the way to man. Man was made after the image of God. We know that going back to Genesis 1, verse 26. But chapter 2, verse 2. "And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done." Verse 3. "Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work, which God had created and made." Again, God set the seventh day, the Sabbath day, apart. He blessed it. He sanctified it. The moment it came into existence is the moment it became holy. If you think about that, this would never be undone. It was sanctified for a special purpose. It was sanctified for mankind. There is nothing else, plant or animal, which was created during the six-day creation, which was expected to treat the Sabbath day as holy. No other part of creation. Man. It was given to man. By doing this, God identified the seventh day as his day. He is the God of the Sabbath. There are actually three mindsets, if you will, to verse 2, which help us guard the Sabbath day within the fortress of our hearts. Three different mindsets in keeping with God's example, which is the great example that we can follow in anything that we do. And it's following his example. It shows us where our mindset is to be. The first mindset is lead up. Lead up. We are to lead up to the Sabbath. Our example of that is the creation week itself. Look at what God did. Look how he operated, how he went about things. In verse 2, it says, God ended his work, which he had done. The statement broken out gives us good insight into this mindset, what we are to do. Ended means to finish or accomplish. To finish or accomplish. It was more than just ended his work. God accomplished his work. He had great accomplishments in the week leading up to that Sabbath. And then he rested. This is insightful because it shows that his example was not haphazard at all. It was full of hard work and it was full of accomplishments when he went about it. It shows us that laziness does not fulfill working up to the Sabbath. And I am not saying you are lazy. That's not at all. It's just saying this. Laziness does not work up to the Sabbath. We are to be hardworking people. It also shows that the incompleteness does not fulfill working up to the Sabbath and how we go about life. This isn't talking about an ongoing project. There's a lot of projects that you say, okay, well, this is going to be a six-month project. Well, you can't finish that in a week. It's not what it's talking about. This is talking about a mind that is continually thinking about things that always need to be done, which takes away from the Sabbath. You sit in Sabbath services, you sit down. The reason I'm bringing this out is because I did this for quite a long time. I had a work phone. I'll tell on myself. This is like confession time, maybe. I had this work phone, but it was also my personal phone, and I had it on my side all the time. And at the time, it was not a joke. After a weekend, I could have 500 emails. That's not a joke. We've counted them different times. We have 500 emails that come in. Well, when you're wearing it, yeah, the sound's off, but you kept feeling it. Every buzz would come in, and I would be listening to a sermon, and I would just feel buzz, and immediately I'm just taken back to, oh, Monday, I'm going to be just swamped. There's this job, okay, this contract, we have to get this underway. And all of a sudden, all this stuff, where's my mind? I'm not listening to the sermon. I'm not in the Sabbath. I have just removed myself from the Sabbath. And that was something many years ago, but it was something I allowed myself to be taken away from what God set up to be holy. When he accomplished something, he said, it's ended. We're in the Sabbath day now. This is where we are, and that's how important it is. Completeness puts the work week out of your mind to be able to concentrate on the Sabbath. The work week isn't allowed in the Sabbath. That's how important it is. It's not always easy. It's not easy at all, but it's worth fighting for. It also shows us that slackness does not fulfill working up to the Sabbath. That's being careless with your time or bad planning. God had perfect planning. Being careless with your time or negligence is not being sure if everything can fit within the time left. All right, I have about 24 hours work of worth left, and it's 2 hours before sundown. All right, let's get to work. Let's do whatever I can. This can lead to someone saying, well, I'll just work 5 minutes. 5 minutes past the Sabbath. This has to be in. This contract has to be in. This has to be done. All of these things. Just, I know, God won't mind. It's just 5 minutes. 5 minutes past the Sabbath. That is dangerous. Also, I might be safe in saying, but maybe not. So I'll bring it back to me. I think a lot of people do this. I definitely have done this from time to time. You think, okay, as a pastor, I'm doing church work. Well, sometimes church work is stuff that needs to be done outside of the Sabbath, and there's so much of it, and a lot of it comes in at times, and you slam into the Sabbath. It's not the way you want to do it. Slamming into the Sabbath is not properly fulfilling the Sabbath. All of a sudden, you're just hitting into it. There's no preparation. There's no time just to come down a little bit. You come into the Sabbath, and you are just kind of hectic. Your mind is sporadic. We don't want to slam into the Sabbath. God was hardworking. He accomplished his work, and he had great consideration of his time at all times. You say, yes, but that's God. Yes, that's our example. We are to strive for perfection. He shows us what that perfection is. Get this, God was dedicated working up to the Sabbath with the Sabbath in mind before the work week even began. He already had it in mind. It was already something there that was important. It shows us that the pinnacle of the week is the Sabbath. The Sabbath is what we work for, and that all work is to be finished before the Sabbath. Our work week, or our week, works up to the Sabbath, meaning from the start of the week, we must have the Sabbath in mind as well. Sunday hits, and that Sabbath is on mind, on our minds. The first mindset, again, is we must lead up to the Sabbath. It's important how we treat that work week coming up to the Sabbath. There's a lot that has to be accomplished within that week. We have to do much within those 6 days, and it's important we have those 6 days, but always the Sabbath in mind. The second mindset is live in. We already kind of briefly talked about this, but live in. We must live in the Sabbath. God lived in the Sabbath. He rested. And I guarantee you, he did it perfectly. He rested. There are ways that we must live in the Sabbath as well. There are two ways, directly from the mouth of God, that we are to live in the Sabbath. Again, we are talking about a mindset, not necessarily all the do's and don'ts. We're not making a list and saying, no, you can't do that. Yes, you can do this. You know, we're not doing that. That's not what we're talking about. Let's go to Exodus 20. We know that is the giving of the Ten Commandments, Mount Sinai. Exodus 20. A little bit different than the Deuteronomy 5. We'll look at both of those. Exodus 20, starting verse 8. Exodus 20, and verse 8. Says, remember, important word, the Sabbath day to keep it holy. God first tells the people to remember. Have it be part of your mind. They have just recently been given freedom. They were rescued, and now they're being taught. Remember to keep the Sabbath holy. They're being taught what to do. Remember, they were slaves before this. But there's another part that we are to remember on the Sabbath. So we understand that. Remember the Sabbath. Don't forget it. Don't forget its importance. Let's drop down to verse 9, or go to verse 9. It says, 6 days you labor and do all your work. All your work. Verse 10, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. It's anything that you control. You yourself control within that. Verse 11, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all of them, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. The Sabbath is a reminder that God is creator. Goes back to creation week, what he did, that he is creator. The Sabbath is more than not doing certain things. It is a reminder, should be a constant reminder, that God is the creator of all things. Again, these signs always point back to God. How powerful, beautiful, faithful God is. Let's go to Deuteronomy 5. Another important aspect here. Deuteronomy 5 is going over the Ten Commandments as well. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 12. A little bit of a difference of wording here. Deuteronomy 5 verse 12 says, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. They have already been doing it for some time. They were already to be remembering, and now it's to observe. Observe here actually means to keep, which we talked about earlier. And the word keep mentioned here is actually to sanctify. So God is saying keep or guard, protect the Sabbath day to sanctify it, to keep it holy. Even though it doesn't begin with remember, there's a second thing that we are to remember on the Sabbath. Verse 15 says, and remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath. That's under the Sabbath day. We are to remember that God on the Sabbath day as our Redeemer. That's a Sabbath thing. as our Redeemer. He is our deliverer out of Egypt. He is a deliverer from sin. And it goes back to him, a reminder of who he is. Without God's great mercy, we would still be held captive by sin. Still relevant today, God delivered us out of Egypt. It's a powerful reminder on the Sabbath, every single Sabbath. To live in the Sabbath, we must remember God as creator and God as deliverer. I think that's very important. It's part of the Sabbath command of how we observe and guard the Sabbath. If we lose sight of that, we lose sight of who we are. We lose our identity, who we belong to, why it's important, why God put it in place, all the blessings that we get from that. Builds that relationship with him. Even though resting is an important part of the Sabbath, it goes beyond that. You can see that this in the short verse, but important verse. Go to Mark 2. Here we have one of the stories we know well, where Jesus goes through the grain fields with his disciples on the Sabbath, and they just pick some of the heads of the grain. And it was on the Sabbath. Verse 27, Mark 2, verse 27. The Pharisees were there, ready to complain, as they were always there ready to complain. No matter what was happening, they were always there. Remember, the Pharisees had their own laws, what you could do, what you couldn't do on the Sabbath. Remember, they listed them out. I mean, so much so that if your house has a fire, you cannot carry things out. But if you can put on 10 layers of clothing and walk out, you can do that, but you can't carry your clothing. Remember, they had all these rules of what you can do on the Sabbath, what you couldn't do on the Sabbath. This was unclean. This was clean. If it was broken, it was still clean. But if this one was cleaned, it doesn't matter because it's unclean, because metals can be, all of those types of things. It gets all convoluted. It was their law. This is part of Christ's answer back to the Pharisees. Mark 2, verse 27 says, "And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath." Let's take a look at the first part. The Sabbath was made for man. There are a couple quotes that I would like to read from a few of the commentators. There's a lot there. This is from Expositors, gives this explanation. It says, "The Sabbath was not created for its own sake, just because." It's a great point. Points to the fact that there was a purpose and a reason for its creation that we can't change. Man can't change it. Religions can't change it. The reason for this was man. Man was created before the Sabbath. It was created for a man as a gift. It was created for rest and worship and that remembrance going back towards God, set apart. Barnes Notes says this about what man was to do on the Sabbath. So on the Sabbath, he says, "Direct his affairs to the eternal." Direct his affairs to the eternal. It was a mind shift. Everything that was going on for 6 days needs to end. There was a mind shift. It was kind of a reset button every week, a constant reminder bringing us back to God. Barnes goes on to say in a different area that he might have undisturbed time, the man, to seek the consolations of religion, to cheer him in the anxieties and sorrows of a troubled world. Do we need that today? Yes, we do. More and more. This is a troubled world. It is a world that gets darker and darker. Again, the Sabbath is a weekly rehabilitation so we don't get swallowed up by all the sadness that's going on. It's something that we should hunger for. We have a bigger picture in mind and a reminder of every single week. Basically, God is saying this world is going to get really, really bad because of the choices of man. Man makes choices. But I've given you a reprieve. I've given you a reset every 7 days, not including the holy days. Every 7 days. Let's look to the next part of the verse. It says, "And not man for the Sabbath." He was speaking to the Pharisees. He's saying that we are not to confine man to regulations created by man. Man does not create those. Is not supposed to create those. In other words, man is not a slave to the Sabbath. We're not a slave to the Sabbath. Meaning man does not serve the Sabbath. The Sabbath was a gift and in essence was to serve man. Again, it's a gift man must honor. The reason is in the next verse, verse 28. Says, therefore, the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. It's a powerful statement that I imagine angered the Pharisees a lot, as he often did anger the Pharisees because he spoke only truth. They would have understood what he was saying. Lord means having power or authority. He to whom a person or thing belongs, about which he has the power of deciding. He was saying he was Lord. Vincent Taylor, who wrote the Gospel according to St. Mark, said, since the Sabbath was made for man, he who is man's Lord has authority to determine its laws and use. I thought that was put well. Basically, Christ was saying, your laws don't apply. They aren't equal to God's word. They aren't equal to God's commands. And they didn't like that, as we know that. Three things we get from this. One, we are to be people of God. Two, so one is we are to be people of God, looking at those statements. Two, we must honor the gift from our God. We must honor the gift from our God. And the third, our mindset and how we conduct ourselves. So our mindset on the Sabbath is how we show honor to our God who gave the gift. Our mindset on the Sabbath is how we show honor to our God who gave the gift. This is how we live in the Sabbath. The Sabbath is so rich for us. Number three, this mindset is carry over. Carry over. This one will be a very, very quick point, pretty much self-explanatory, but let's go ahead and go to one verse or two verses, Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58 is the fasting chapter, but it has a little part to do with the Sabbath. At the end, Isaiah 58, verse 13. Isaiah 58, verse 13. It's such so rich with this of what we are to do. It says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure, it doesn't mean you can't enjoy. That's not what that's talking about. It means removing God, pushing him aside, and doing the things that just pertain to you. It's all that selfishness. From doing your pleasure, you can enjoy things on the Sabbath, family time, and all of those things. On my holy day, God's Sabbath is a holy day, and call it, which we know that, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and show honor, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor seeking your own words. All that selfishness, removing God from the day. Not what that's talking about at all. God is speaking about a mindset. What's in the mind, how you think, how you live, whole mindset. Verse 14, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth. Think about the blessings of this, what this would do, the energy, the feelings. And feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. And this has long-term blessings. I think it's easy to see that has immediate blessings as well. It feeds you for the next week. It replenishes you. It strengthens you. It prepares you. It's something that you carry over from today and you move into the start of the week and through the week. We take it. So let's bring this to a close. We have been given a sign which the world has never known or it's been rejected. This sign, how important it is. This is a sign between God and his people. This has never been something that we should ever take lightly. There are three mindsets which encompass the whole week, but then the next as well. It encompasses that week and then begins the next week as well. Three mindsets to honoring the wonderful gift God has given us. One, the first was lead up. We are to be hardworking. This is talking about a type of people that we are to be. We are to be hardworking and have accomplishment and consider our time. We are to be dedicated, working up to the Sabbath, again with the Sabbath in mind. That's big. Two, the second was live in. As we discussed earlier, remembering God as our creator and deliverer. Creator and deliverer is essential to living in the Sabbath. He is our Lord and Master and gave us the Sabbath as a gift. Talk about a wonderful gift. We must honor that gift from God. Our mindset and how we conduct ourselves in and on the Sabbath is how we show honor to the one who gave the gift. show honor to God. Number three was to carry over. The Sabbath is a gift that feeds you for the next week. Everything we get here today, and I'm not just talking about the sermonette, the sermon, the singing, it's the fellowshipping, it's the bond building, it's the family ship that you're building. All of those things, it replenishes you, it strengthens you, it prepares you. It's what gives you focus through the week. It ends the week, but if you really think about it, it also begins the week. Not in the matter of time, but in a spiritual fuel for the next week. Let us be a people who lead up, who live in, and carry over the wonderful blessings of the Sabbath.